Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 239. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning, Steve.
Graham thickens. Yeah. He's gone.
Graham. Hello, Graham.
And Phil Wilson.
Oh, I was on mute again. Oh, crap.
Hello.
Hello. Sorry about that, guys.
No problem.
Happy to be here.
Phil, are you on?
Yeah, of course I'm on. I live to serve.
Boy, I'm glad. I'm glad.
And Steve Borsch is a bit under the weather today. He's got the remnants of a cold. So
yeah,
we have it's Graham, it's Steve, it's Tim, it's Phil, and it's phlegm. So
and it's phlegm. Oh God,
phlegm. So anyway,
isn't it the greatest word, by the way?
Phlegm is great.
Phlegm.
It's right up
P-H-L-E-G-M.
It's right up there with smegma.
I haven't heard that since high school.
We won't necessarily. That's one of those words you looked up and laughed, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Hard to spell and hard to cough up too, you know?
Yeah. So Graham, please.
Go there.
God, it's too early for that. I mean, seriously.
Oh my God.
Oh man. Okay. Anyway. Graham thickens. We're at a couple of interesting events this week, and one of them was in Colorado.
My gosh, I'm happy to be back home. It's been a wild week, but a very enjoyable one. And yeah, I was at my 7th annual DFRAG conference, and I won't go into a lot of detail about it, but suffice it to say, it was a near religious experience and or a brain explosion. Take your pick. And I blogged about it, a couple of posts on GrahamThickensOnTech.com. So I won't go into detail of what I heard and learned there, but it was an amazing lineup of great speakers and a lot of great networking. I managed to get three startups from Minneapolis out there. They loved it.
Oh, great.
Made a lot of great contacts. And so it was everything from big data to APIs, future of work, underwater robots. I mean, it was merged into another event that the same guy does called Blur, which is about human computer interface, robots, Internet of Things kind of stuff. But I had to leave on Wednesday before the rest of that played out. However, I did get the story of the underwater robots. So that was kind of cool. Go check that out on my blog. I was back Wednesday, had a chance to kind of decompress. And then it was off to MobCon early Thursday morning as the sole Minovate representative.
Yep.
So yeah.
Yeah.
So,
no, they never got back to me. So I said,
yeah. That's a bummer. And you know what? I never saw another media person there at all. I could be wrong, but I didn't see Julio. I didn't see, Kathy Grayson or anybody from the Tribune. Oh. I don't even know how many press passes were given out for that thing, but I feel honored that I got to go. And I did my best deciding to just tweet madly about it on the Minovate account, and probably did, I don't know, what did I do, 40, 50 or more tweets?
I unfollowed you because, oh no, that's us. Never mind.
it's safe to come back now.
Unsubscribed. Yeah. From or unfollowed. Yeah. Well, anyway, and most of them had photos attached to them, shooting with my new 5S. And I was going to do video interviews to upload to YouTube, like I did at DFRAG. I did a few of those. Mm-hmm. One really cool startup to check out. So, go subscribe to my YouTube channel for God's sake so I can get to 100 and then I can live stream. Anyway, I tried to do that at MobCon, but it was just so noisy and so crowded. I tried to do a quick one of Bjorn Stansvik right at the beginning, right before it was going to start, and it didn't work out too well. And I thought, okay, screw that. I'm not going to skip the videos. They take a while to upload anyway. So I just did still still photos attached to most of my tweets. And yeah, it was an excellent event. Probably the highlight for me was the mob demo talks, where I think about eight or nine startups pitched, many of which I knew. And then they held off till the very end to announce the winners, which was nice. Kept a lot of people around till the bitter end. And so that was fun. At Scene, the law enforcement mobile app company, won first place. So they got $5,000 in cash and $20,000 in development services from MentorMate, I guess it's the deal. And then number two, second place was When I Work. And third place was Kitizen. I don't know if you guys have heard about the pivot of Itizen to Kitizen, which is pretty cool for kind of a marketplace for kids' clothes, you know, to buy and sell kids' clothes. So, but there were so many great startups that pitched, MyMeds and oh, a bunch of others. It's all up on the Twitter stream. You can read about it. And yeah, awesome event. And I was happy to be able to represent Minovate there.
You know, one of the things that I was wondering about was, because I really didn't see this with respect to sessions on tools, other than there was one that was sort of a high level one that people sort of laughed at a little bit.
On which one?
I can't remember the name of the session. It was something like, you know, make a mobile app in four easy steps or something like that.
Oh yeah.
But were there tools oriented sessions and market oriented sessions?
There was a security session, which I didn't go to. A lot of it was mobile marketing oriented and strategy oriented. I mean, there were some good sessions by our friends at DoApp, Wade Beavers, and you know, and Rob Weber. Wade Beavers talked on location. Rob Weber talked, you know, about things going on in the mobile ad world and talked about what native advertising is all about. So those were very good. Your old buddy Jake Coughlin from XRS, formerly Zeta, did a big keynote after lunch on the first day. That guy's a smooth dude.
Oh, yeah.
That was probably the best, most engaging keynote of them all, including the guy from Google who kicked it off, which was sort of a yawner to me. I don't know. But yeah, Jay did good. So, you know, there wasn't a lot of real geeky stuff, Steve. So, you know, it was mostly, you know, there were a lot of ad guys there talking about mobile marketing and strategy and, you know, but people from out of town. I mean, several people from Chicago. The guy that did the, you know, doing a mobile app in what was seven easy steps came all the way from L.A. And he's got that funky app, Hang With. Have you seen that?
Hang.com/
You know, that's kind of crazy. 500,000 downloads, I guess. But again, he's a former agency creative director. So, there, you know, it was a pretty heavy, you know, ad marketing sort of focus to most of the event. But there was a little bit for everybody. I mean, you know, the breakouts, it's always hard to choose. You have to choose between four every session.
Yeah, you know? But you know what amazed me was because of mobile and that focus on marketing and outreach and all of that, that there wasn't anything really about NFC or about Bluetooth LE and the technologies that were driving things, or even like what Target was doing in or is doing in their stores with, hey, you get free Wi-Fi. Oh, by the way, if you have our app on there, we're going to be able to track you and give you special things and so forth.
MomCon is very much not technical in nature. There's really not a lot of technical focus on it at all. It really is all about, you know, catering to the CIOs and those sorts of folks trying to educate on that space.
But to that point, Phil, it should be about what's happening strategically. And what sorts of things are going to happen that one can take advantage of in the future?
Well, you'll just have to come to Mobile March then, because that's the sort of stuff we do. You know, that's the crossover piece. We do that crossover, you know, probably a little bit more than MobCon does. We try to cross more between development and technology and also the business world. So this is really MobCon, very targeted more towards the CIO level folks. So, and also the marketing people. It's what their focus is.
Yeah, it was a big, big deal, though. I mean, unbelievable, the logistics to pull this thing off and the money that was spent on it, you know, and it surely wasn't a money-making event, but it certainly raised the visibility of MentorMate, which I was shocked to learn is now 200 employees strong and, you know, brought over a bunch of their people from their Sofia, Bulgarian office, which is, I don't know what that is. That's probably 50 or 60 people or something like that. So, you know, they spent a lot of money pulling this thing together and promoting it, obviously. We all saw the electronic billboards around town. So, you know, they put a hell of an effort into it and I think attracted a lot of good speakers and good interaction. So, you know, I'm glad I caught it and had a lot of
Well, and then
would you have gone had it not been free?
I wouldn't have paid $500 for it, but then I've been covering events for, I tell people it's 12 or 15 years now. I don't think I've paid a conference fee, so why would I start now? I go and work like mad and produce content, you know, while I'm at these things. So, but you can have work, do work and have fun and talk to people at the same time.
Yeah.
If you know how to juggle things, which I've kind of learned how to do at these deals.
Well, I was interested too this week in the MHTA Techni Awards, and so that was interesting. But a lot of big companies in there this time: 3M, Toro, Honeywell. Well, they're bigger than usual, though. Seriously. Yeah. I mean,
okay. So there's one thing that we need to get right off the top here.
And what's that?
Is, and I'm sure that no one from MHTA listens, but if they did, you know, linking to a PDF file on your WordPress site is like a very quaint kind of thing that we used to do way back when I was using Netscape Navigator, for instance. You just don't do that now. I mean, what's the deal?
Well, what do you do? You know what's so funny? I really busted their chops.
You could cut and paste the styled HTML version into your site so it looks okay, you know?
Well, it's funny because I busted their chops at one point because they were putting in links to PDFs without putting in parens PDFs. PDF, you know? So you'd know when you click on a link that it's going to load a PDF.
Downloaded. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So. But I mean, come on. I mean, who does this? And they're high tech, reportedly.
Well, it's in their name anyway, you know. Apparently, it's in their name
and not in their
name. Well, remember their site. A few years ago, their site was just the most horrendously bad. And at least now it's a WordPress site and it's, you know, it's improved.
Yeah, it looks a lot better generally. Yeah.
Yes. So they're making strides.
And they do nice stuff like they have a very good tech event calendar, you know, which, you know, is probably the best one I've seen, really, that lists more events and stuff going out like 3 months, you know. So, I mean, they're doing some things that are good, you know. Mm-hmm. But you're right, Steve. It's just it's so big company oriented and it seems to be coming even more so, you know.
Well, they did put a couple of small ones in there. UpNet and CogCubed,
which we talked about,
but you know most of the startup community, it doesn't even show up on their radar.
Didn't iCrime win in that win a Techni Award as well?
Oh,
in
did
the
they?
Division? I think they did.
No, I don't think so.
I didn't click see that
on
pop up,
click but, on the PDF. I believe they did. Yeah,
but XRS Corporation.
No, that's Jay Coughlin.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, that's Jay Coughlin.
That's a biggie, yeah. Yeah, iCrime, by the way, the name of the company is @-scene.com.
Yeah, right.
Right, but their product is iCrime Fighter, right, yep.
Yeah.
So anyway, Hackney Awards. That one totally went by me. What night was that anyway? Wednesday night or?
It was the 7th, so that was Thursday.
Oh.
Right?
It's that we were partying at MobCon about then.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which was fun. I mean, the reception, you know, was worth the price of admission right there.
Yeah. Well, there's a bunch of other stuff going on too. So, hey, retail boy, Tim Elliott. Is showrooming really fading?
I don't know. That was an interesting story in the Wall Street Journal, and you know, Best Buy was featured. And what Best Buy has done is very savvy toward showrooming, which is to do price matching, so that when you're in the store, you're looking at the item and you say, "Yeah, this is great," and you're going to buy it at Amazon. Best Buy will actually this price match it, and you can get it right then. So a lot of people, that's what they're doing. So I'm not sure if showrooming is over, and if they've killed showrooming, as some people have said, but it's clearly not affecting them as much as we all thought it would at this point.
Yeah.
So hats off to Hubert Joly and his great strategy.
Well, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to a Best Buy announcement that they're going to be opening their stores at 6 p.m. local time on Thanksgiving evening.
That's just bad. I mean,
why do we need to put a link in there for that? I mean,
well, why does everyone have to open on Thanksgiving? It's just crazy. What's the next thing? They're going to be open on Christmas Day now?
Well, but you know, it was so funny because my wife, who is one who is just absolutely dead set against, major interruptions for family time, you know, family events and all of that. I brought this up to her. I said, yeah, you know, that a lot of stores are going to be opening at 8 p.m. on Thanksgiving. And I said, it's just not fair, you know, to somebody that's got to go in and work. And she said, she looks at me. She used to be a retailer, right? She was a buyer at Target and she ran room and board and all that stuff. And she says, yeah, but that's the only way they can compete with online, because online's open 24/7.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay.
But, it's still sad.
That's a lame excuse. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's a lame excuse.
My daughter works at Target, and she has to go to work on Thanksgiving at, I think it's like 8 o'clock or something at night.
Yeah.
Because I think they open at 9, I believe. So, and a lot of other places are open at 9 as well.
Yep. Well, and then,
but anyway. Speaking of Target, hey, Phil, have you traded in that old iPad 2 yet?
No, not as of yet. I was thinking about that this morning. I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Might want to read Julio's story. That looks like it's kind of a wild goose chase.
Yes, but it seems like the goose chase was resolved right here south of the river. Just
that's true. Go to the new Apple Valley store first and see if they have any.
Yes,
really.
But $200 for an old iPad, that's pretty good.
Yeah, which isn't bad. I'm just trying to. What's the new iPad Air go for now? $3 million, something like that.
$499.
Get
$499.
Yep.
But if you're spendy like Steve, you know, it's like $900.
Well, for the 128 gig, yeah.
Yeah, it gets a 128 with the 3G, you know.
Yeah, but I'm going to wait until the iPad Mini comes out, because I want to see that before I make a decision.
I'd get the $200, I'd still need to figure out where I'd get the other $299. Groceries, I suppose.
You could sell that Pebble watch, you'd probably get $100 for it.
Yeah.
So there, now you're $200 out. Yeah.
But it says Kickstarter edition on the back. It's
you can't sell that. Yeah.
So are they allowing trade-ins of just iPad 2 and newer, or do they go?
They'll take anything.
You get $200 for an iPad 1?
Yep. Yeah, as long as
my God.
As long as it's not, you know, falling apart.
So if you have one hanging around, it's a great deal. One.
Yeah.
Especially an iPad 1, because they said the iPad 1 street price is $65 for the 16
gig. I was going to say, that's about what I figured, yeah. That's a hell of a deal then. And I just sold my iPad 3 to my son for $150, so... But
you could have gotten $50.
Yeah, you could
take it back.
He can go in and
I'm going to repossess it.
No. Yeah, he could actually take it in and make $50. So
I'm loving my iPad Air though. Wow, but not the case. I got to get a decent case for this thing. I do not like that smart case thing. that they hit $79 for.
You know that when I was on my driving adventure, that I was in Utah and the thing went face down on the desk and cracked. I mean, it broke. The glass shattered. It was like, seriously? I mean, it just dropped, you know, a couple of inches. And then, so I had that replaced. 2 weeks later, we're doing the estate sale at my dad's house. And I get up and knock over the little TV tray that was next to me that had a cash box on it and my new iPad. It broke.
Oh, boy.
And so I had two within 2 weeks, you know, did the $49 thing. You get two incidences. Well,
yeah,
you just
have AppleCare. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just dropped it again. Thank God it didn't crack.
Because you'd already gone through year two.
Yeah. And I had a beefier case and I thought, nah, I'm taking care of it now. It'll be fine. So I put the old case on there, which is thin like the one you're talking about. And all I can say is get a decent case.
Oh, yeah, it's way too flimsy. By the way, I did buy the AppleCare for the iPad Air. First time I've done that. I've lucked out up till now and never broken anything.
Yeah.
But I remembered your story. I told the guy in the Apple store.
You've never gotten the AppleCare before, Graham?
No, I never have. And I've never regretted it. But after hearing Steve's story, and I was telling the guy, you know, what I do, and he's like, oh, he wants to know all about our podcast and everything. And I said, well, let me tell you about my buddy Steve with this AppleCare story. And it's like, he said, well, maybe you want to do that. And I go, you know, I think I do.
Yeah.
So,
well, especially with mobile stuff, you know, a laptop is less prone to you dropping it, but with a phone or with a tablet. I have to tell you though, that the Best Buy program is a little bit more money, but it's actually better because anything that happens to it, you can replace it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, they tried to sell me that when I bought, you know, I bought my 5S there because Tim chipped me off to the better trade-in program, got $205 for my 4S, which is more money than what the 5S cost me. But anyway, she said, well, at the end, she said, well, so do you want the Geek Squad protection plan? And I, you know, it was taken. So I got to get going. No, let's just wrap it up. You know, maybe I should have done that, huh?
Well, you can still go back.
Yeah, you got 30 days to decide or something.
Yeah.
So like if I drop it and smash it, can I go in and buy it then?
Well, not only that, but if you
I don't know.
if you do what I did, which is I had it sitting on the ledge near the shower, and I got out of the shower and I flung my towel around, hit the phone, it bounced on the toilet lid, and fell on the floor. It literally was centimeters from going into the toilet, and if it had gone in, it would be like, sorry, you got to buy a new phone. So. And Best
even
Buy
if
would
you
replace
have
it.
AppleCare?
Yeah, even if you have AppleCare. I'm pretty sure. Maybe you get one water incident.
The moral to the story is don't take a shower with your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really? No, don't have the phone in the shower.
Don't fling your towel around like a cape.
Anyway, because I'm worried about the steam of setting off the sensor inside.
No, I know. It's next to the shower, though.
I know, but it's still in there. I never put any electronics
in the bathroom
at all.
No.
I mean, in the bathroom. I mean, it's still steamy in the bathroom. So anyway.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Next.
It's dangerous, you know.
Yeah,
next. 75% of iPhone episodes that, you know, are dropped in the loo. I read a UK study on that.
Oh, yeah.
In the loo.
In the loo.
In the loo. In the loo.
That's what they call it over there.
Well, it's funny because we had my son's replaced some time ago, and the guy goes, because Alex had said he dropped it in the sink, and the guy comes out and he goes, boy, it sure doesn't smell like it was dropped in the sink.
Oh, <God. laughs>
And so he goes, well, you know, we'll do it this time, but that's it, you know, and so on. So anyway, I thought that was pretty funny.
Say, I read where Apple stores are going to repair the 5S and the 5C right in store if you got cracked glass.
Right.
Which is nice. They've never done that before, have they?
No, they haven't because they haven't had a method to replace the glass and have the touch sensor capability work perfectly. And now they apparently have done that, you know, figured out that process. So
so get ready for longer lines at the Genius Bar.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Well, they'll just have you drop it off, I'm sure. But
yeah, so, you can't Well, the story I read is almost like they were saying you could go in and wait for it while they do it. But boy, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
It would create really long lines eventually.
Yep.
All right, you guys, who bought Twitter? How many? Who invested in Twitter this week?
Well, I didn't. I'm waiting for it to get down to 15, just like Facebook.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been on that. Let's put our orders in right now.
That's right. Yeah. Future order. You know, when it gets to 15, we're in.
I had to hold myself back. I was actually going to put in an order for like 50 shares or something, you know. And I thought, wait a minute, this thing could really run up. And if I put in an open order, I'll be spending way more money than I want to. You know, it's like, I'm not going to get it close to 26. Well, hell, it opens at what, 46?
At well,
like,
yeah.
45, something like that, yeah.
And I was reading tweets from one guy I know that said, thank you, Twitter, or thank you, Morgan Stanley, you know, for, you know, letting me have my allotment at 26, just put in an order to sell at 45, you know. I mean, it's all rigged for the big guys, you know, the guys that get allotments from the brokerages. And, you know, then they can turn around and sell it right after it opens. And, you know, they've damn near doubled their money, you know.
Well, see, what I love is, and I'll put a link in the show notes, Henry Blodgett, our dot-com boom disgraced fund manager, analyst. He did say, though, to stay away from Twitter. He says at $45, Wall Street's assuming that Twitter's going to do about $3 billion of revenue in 2 years. That's possible, but I don't think it's likely.
No. So it closed yesterday at 41.65 cents.
Yeah.
The market cap is still close to $20 billion.
Right. Right.
You know, maybe I'll put in an order to buy some at 30. That sounds about right to me. We'll watch her go down. No, I don't know. Yeah. I'm bullish on it, but
this is the actual first time that Twitter's actually made money. So, and they made it on the stock exchange.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't think that it's, I mean, it's just like Facebook. I wouldn't invest in Facebook just because I just don't think that, that people are in Facebook to pay attention to ads that show up in the newsfeed.
Nope.
They're there to hang out with their friends. And
I'm not sure what Twitter's going to be able to do to really monetize, to get to the level that now the market wants them at.
Ads that show up in the newsfeed.
Yeah, I know. It's not going to work. So, you know, people will go elsewhere. And also this week, EverPix, which was a startup, which is amazingly close to a startup I worked on 5 years ago that didn't make it because people thought it was too obvious, is shutting down. And that's a company that's actually making a useful product for normal people, not just tech people or people that are into technology, to organize their photographs. And, you know, that couldn't continue. So you've got, you know, Twitter, who's doesn't have a real path to revenue, really, you know, run up to $20 billion valuation. And then another useful service shut down, you know, because they can't get enough people paying for it. But it just seems things are out of whack in my mind.
Yeah.
Well, I heard they were going to change the name from EverPix to For a While Pix. I know.
Well, do we think we're at the peak of another bubble now? I mean, it seems like it to me.
Well, the smart guys at Defrag think we're still 2 or 3 years away from it, but that implies that they're expecting it.
Well, I mean, Twitter, the Twitter IPO, I think shows you that things are just out of whack. And, you know, we'll see. Maybe they can turn that into something, but I don't think so. I think we're going to look back in 3 or 4 years and see what happened to them, which will be, you know, another pets.com meltdown kind of thing.
Well, I don't know. I don't think Twitter's going to melt down. I mean, they are, you know, they are growing revenues quite nicely, but the stock is way ahead of, you know, of reality in many people's minds. But then so has Amazon been for years and years and years. I mean, people are betting on the future for Amazon and, you know, the market is doing the same thing on Twitter, but it's just a frenzy. You know, it's a media frenzy because Twitter has been everywhere in the media for how many years now? I mean, it's just been going and going. Everybody's got it in front of their face or hearing about it all day long, every day practically. I don't know if you're watching TV, it's follow us on Twitter or read our updates on Twitter, you know? So,
well, you know what the problem though is? I mean, when I think about EverPix and I think about stuff like camera uploads in Dropbox, you know, and the syncing stuff and all of that and iCloud and so on, it all sounds great, but then go back, like I'm looking right now at images that came from my iPhone dating back to 2008. And I've got over 4,000 photos that I shot through my iPhones, and none of them are organized. So
right.
I mean, for me,
that's what EverPix is trying to do, is they're trying to intelligently through algorithms and looking at the EXIF data, trying to organize that for you.
Right. They're and also, Apple's doing the same thing in iPhoto.
Right. But stuff like that apparently doesn't get traction with the investment community.
Right.
But stuff like Twitter, which doesn't have a real practical use. Yeah, it's fun and yeah, there's some news stuff and there's, you know, but it doesn't have a practical use to solve a real world problem, right? That, you know, has a huge valuation. It just seems out of whack to me.
Yeah, it does. It does. But it's all about where people are paying attention, I guess.
Yeah, no, I don't think Twitter is going to go anywhere. I don't think Facebook's going to go anywhere either long term. I think that they're going to both peak and then start to decline. And then something else, we'll all be using something else.
Speaking of attention, that was my favorite tweet at Defrag was, we're entering a world with an abundance of everything except attention. How's that right. for a...
How true is that?
Oh man.
True.
Yeah.
True dat.
You betcha. Yeah. Say, speaking of IPOs, you know, Jack Dorsey's got another one coming next year. You know, they're saying Square, you know, how about that
So that starts, that is a real world problem that he's solving, and he's solving it in a novel and elegant way.
Yep.
So I think Square is probably a great company to invest in.
Yep. And I just read where Box has chosen its bankers. So we're going to be seeing an IPO from Box in 2014.
Well, and actually I like them a lot because they have a really great security model for storage. So, I mean, that's...
Well, they should. I mean, it's basically a ripoff of Dropbox, but for enterprise. So
right.
they better be really good from a security standpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're kind of racing ahead of Dropbox. I mean, Dropbox might go public too. I don't know, but Box sort of stole a lot of the oxygen away from them. But that Aaron Levy is just out there constantly, you know. Yeah. Another media star, you know. Another Jack Dorsey.
Hello.
What happened to Graham?
I cut myself off because I got background noise going on here. So I'm muting off and on.
Well, so I have to bring up something that I just happened to stumble across last night on Apple Insider, and it's about a patent that Apple was granted for home automation technology. And it's really not home automation technology. It's part of that. But it's about having an iPhone intelligently control secondary devices at another locale, such as home appliances. So they've got a graphic, I'll put a link in the show notes, which shows the relay server in the center. And then out from that is, you know, tablet and a car and a home appliance and a landline phone and a lamp, et cetera, et cetera. And it's kind of what I was concerned about with SmartThings was that it would be pretty trivial for Apple to do a firmware update to their Apple Airport Extremes and Apple TVs to be able to act as smart hubs to control things.
When I saw this, that's the first thing I thought of, because one of the things that it's pointing to is your TV. So I wonder if the new Apple TV is more ambitious than just TV and they rename it to something else.
Could be.
you know, iHub or something like that.
An Apple TV watch.
No, no, yeah. It becomes
a TV on your wrist. Oh, God, that would be
it's
cool.
It's a puck-sized home hub that you know, is that relay server, and it can do things like, you know, Chromecast your subscription stuff from iCloud to your TV, just like Apple TV does right now.
Yeah.
But it can do that plus a lot more stuff.
Well, and what I was intrigued by was this connected to the location tracking iBeacon, which is the Bluetooth low energy technology that you'd be able to slap a beacon in a retail store and you walk in and it would know who you are. And that has all kinds of positive and negative implications. So I'm not sure.
Well, they could use that in the home context too. So
yeah,
you know, you walk in and your preferences, you know, happen, and your wife walks in and her preferences, you know, to whatever the lights or music or whatever.
Well, that's what I'm doing right now with SmartThings. Is I've got a little key fob, and when I walk into a room, I can have it turn on the lamp. Now, I did that for a while, and it drove me insane, so I turned it off. I didn't do it
But you don't
anymore.
Have, like, the trumpet fanfare come in?
I don't. I have, actually, I have Siri say, hey, Mr. Wonderful. But other than that, I... oh, God. Well, so, you know, what's interesting about this, too, is I put something else in here, and it was a GigaOm article about Comcast quietly pushing a 300 gig cap and overage charges. And I started to look at this because I was looking at my own use, and in August I used 352 gigs, and that would be $10 more with the overage charge. And September was 336. I'm sure that I'd pay some prorated amount. 319 in October, because we do a ton of TV streaming, and we're on the net all the time. And then in November so far, it's only the 9th, and I've used 176 gigs. And so if I look at that out over 30 days, it's 528 gigs or an additional $45 in their overage charges. And what I'm thinking about is okay, so let's say that Apple has a device like this that's communicating with their servers, and, you know, what kind of data is going to go back and forth? But also, what happens with 4K TV? You know, double the resolution of today's HDTV. You know, what kind of data is that going to use?
I think we're going to have discs.
Yeah, right. Big Blu-rays.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to have. Netflix is trialing some 4K streaming, but I don't think we're going to be streaming it over the current internet infrastructure. I think we're going to see whatever the next version of Blu-ray is. That really? Will be these ridiculously big discs, and that's the way you're going to get your 4K content.
It's really the only way they're going to be able to do it. Because even now, the streaming video, I think I said this before, but I was never able to convince my wife why we needed to buy a movie on Blu-ray. And if it was one that I wanted to keep or one that I knew I'd watch more than once, I wanted to own it on Blu-ray. And she says, why? I mean, it looks, you know, just as good on Netflix. And I said, no. And then we'd go back and forth on this, and she says, it doesn't really matter to me. Well, then now fast forward, we're watching Downton Abbey, and she goes, why is it all blocky like that? Because it was a particularly dark scene. And I just laughed, and I said, it's because there's not enough bit depth in the stream. So they can only show so many shades of gray. And so you don't have as much contrast, and it's all aliased and looks like crap to me. And so I think we got a long way to go before we can get to a point where we can all stream enough and it'll be good enough quality. But boy, yeah, you're right. 4K is going to have discs, won't it?
Yeah, no, I don't think we're going to see that. But getting back to your point, and I have to do the disclosure that I work with Comcast, but what I say is my own opinion. Why do you think you should pay a flat rate for excessive amounts of use? I mean, you pay, if you use your electricity excessively, you pay more. If you use your water excessively, your gas, whatever. Why do you think that you're entitled to, for a flat fee, all you can eat for internet?
I don't.
Okay, then what's your objection to this?
Well, my objection to this is that I don't have an alternative. So in the mobile space, if I don't like a practice that AT&T is doing, I can switch to Verizon or T-Mobile or Sprint. And one of them, to be competitive, will maybe do something like Sprint does, which is unlimited, all you can eat data, yada, yada, yada. With Comcast, I have no other alternative. I mean, there isn't another a service that I can buy in my home or in my business that can rival the 105 down and 20 up service from Comcast. I can't go to CenturyLink. I mean, I really have no other alternative.
Well, you can. That's just the choice.
No, I can't. There's no other available service. The only other service that would equal the bandwidth that is available from Comcast is through CenturyLink. And they don't, I think the ceiling is, you know, 45 down and 7 up or something like that.
You can't get a business like lease line?
Like a CenturyLink? Well, yeah, but is that what you're saying or something like that?
You mean like a T1 line or a multiplexed, you know, T5 or something? Well, sure. Yep. If I wanted to spend $600-$700 a month, so there isn't anything that's on an even close to being equal footing. That's really my only issue.
You have no choice in who you buy electricity from, or water, or gas. That's all fixed as well, single provider.
That's true. And the more you
use those products, the more you pay.
But all of those are regulated by the Public Utilities Commission. So. Are you proposing that Comcast be regulated by the Public Utilities Commission?
No, I'm just saying that just like everything else, gasoline and, you know, this everything you can think of, the more you use it, the more you pay for that usage. And you're not the only one that believes that all you can eat should be a fixed price. And it just all these companies, no matter if it's Comcast or Charter or anybody else, it costs them more money to serve you if you're using it more. So they're trying to make more, you know, money to offset that cost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a business. It's not, they're not a, you know, a whatever. They're not a government agency or not-for-profit business, you know?
No, I understand that. But XL Energy, for example, if they want to raise rates, has to go to the Public Utilities Commission and have a justification for raising the rates, and then be granted that exception and be able to go ahead and do it. But they're regulated because their infrastructure is set up so that they're the only game in town. I mean, you can't have multiple power companies delivering power over the same infrastructure. So the difference with Comcast, you know, Comcast purports to be their own business and a for-profit business, and why shouldn't they be able to do whatever they want? Comcast would not exist. Cable television would not exist without government rights of way and government intervention in municipalities and, you know, throughout the state to grease the skids for the cable TV companies to be able to put their cable behind your house or to bury it and so on. And so it was because of government creating the climate for them to be able to do that. And the only reason that it worked was because everybody wanted, you know, more bandwidth and more options and et cetera, et cetera. And they knew that the satellite delivery would be able to rival cable, which of course it isn't for internet.
But Steve, I think what Tim is saying is, you know, that, you know, whether it's whatever the price increase is, doesn't negate the fact that there is a sliding scale in place. And why shouldn't there be a sliding scale for Comcast? Meaning the more you use, the more you pay.
Yeah, the only reason why we're in this situation that we are in is that when we were all using dial-up, we could do a local call for as long as we want. We could knock it up for 24 hours a day if we wanted for the same flat fee.
Of course, it took that long to download a movie. So,
well, true. But I mean that's the only reason why we have these fixed rates for seemingly unlimited service. And all these companies are trying to figure out ways to make it fair for customers. And this is just their way of trying to do that. And a 300 gigabyte cap for most customers is going to be plenty big, you know,
today. But if they are allowed to put in caps, then as soon as there's an alternative to the 51% revenue that Comcast generates from television, then they can manipulate the cap to ensure that there will be limits on competition. Simple as that. I mean, they're going to do whatever they got to do to protect their business. And so, you know, you know what, we could go on and on. I'll put a link in the show notes to Stacey Higginbotham's, or maybe it's Ohm's. Yeah, it's Ohm Mollick's article about why tier broadband is the enemy of innovation. And just go through that. I mean, it's clear that we're talking about apples and oranges. If we try to talk about telephony, we can get into why the Bell system was broken up and why all of a sudden there was competition amongst long distance providers and how that ultimately is leading to the death of voice as a separate business. It's going to be all data. It's going to be VoIP and it's going to be all data. And so
it is all data. It is all data right now.
Yeah. Right? So if
the way that
to your point, though,
billing for it is broken.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, I would absolutely pay on a tiered service if the Public Utilities Commission set the rates for Comcast for internet.
And I bet you you'd be paying a lot more than you are right now.
I don't know.
If that were the case.
I bet you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But they aren't at a utility. They're a value-added, you know, service that is regulated by the government, but it's not regulated like a utility.
Well, they're not regulated by the government. The internet service? Not at all. And the only reason they're playing ball is they wanted NBC Universal to go through. That was pretty clear. And that's why they backed off the caps. And now they're test marketing different things with caps to figure out what the right model should be. And again, you know, I would argue that the only markets where there is true competition are in those markets where cable is up against Fios, you know, the fiber to the home from Verizon, because the Fios speed is symmetrical up and down, same speed. And you can buy, you know, 100 megabit per second up and down for, you know, $40 a month. And that's where the cable companies are having a hell of a time competing.
The other place where there's competition is where Google Fiber is available.
Yeah, in what, two markets?
No, it's like four, I believe now. There's Provo, Utah. There's Austin, Texas. The suburbs of Kansas City. There's several around in Kansas and Missouri area. So
and Comcast is fighting Seattle. That who wants to do municipal fiber.
I didn't know that, so
I'll put a link in the show notes.
Well, it's a company that's trying to compete with all sorts of forces, so you know they're going to do what they need to do for their shareholders.
Right, and that's fine, but if it's to the detriment of all of us, that's not good. So that's all. Now here's Phil and Graham rolling their eyes like, okay, when are these two guys going to be done? So let's talk about.
I got nowhere to go.
All right, so let's talk about The Onion ending its print run in December.
I didn't even know they were still printing up anywhere.
Really?
Why do we need to talk about that? Yes, another print institution is not going to be doing print. They're moving to the online. Move on.
Yeah, but. All right, let's just move on.
What are you going to say there? I mean,
It's not funny. It's Providence, Rhode Island, in Milwaukee, and some other place, Chicago. I mean, what?
Huh? Well, those are the few that are left.
I know.
But I used to pick up the print edition.
About that story, though, was that they had like seen the whole death of print, so that they sort of like licensed the content out, and then the local people were people selling the ads and whatnot. So that was a great strategy.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you that I wish they'd follow the Verge strategy, which is, do such an outstanding job online that you have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the Verge is probably one of the best online news sites ever.
I would agree.
I think the Onion's pretty damn nice. I got no problem.
No, but the thing that bothers me about The Verge is that they're burning so much money that I hope that they're able to continue it. Or at some point, my fear is that it's going to run out of money and that's going to be it. Because they're spending so much money and they have so many people. I mean, that was the reason that they all left Engadget, was that AOL wasn't going to allow them to basically double the staff and run up their burn rate really high. And that's what they've done at the Verge. And it's a great site. I read it every day. I think it's great. And what they've done is very innovative. It just concerns me that when things slow down, which I think the economy will. I don't think there is, because it's all based on advertising.
Business model? Yeah.
No. And that scares me, because I mean, these guys will do something else, I'm sure, if it all implodes. But I don't think it's going to be around forever unless they've got to figure out a way to make money. You know,
I think they'll continue to raise money, though. I think there are those investors who will believe in it and continue to pour money into it. I really do, you know, in the New York VC community. I doubt they'll have any problem keeping it going, you know. But of course, eventually, you know, the rubber's got to meet the road, you know, profits have to come. So it's just a question of how long a runway the investors are going to give them.
Well, you heard about Time going with Flipboard, you know, with People Magazine and all that. You know, the one thing that was great about that is now I don't have to wait to read People till I get to my hairstylist that I get my hair cut. So that's but they're bringing, they brought Fortune, Time, People, and InStyle magazines to Flipboard. And I've already gone and looked at them, and I've seen just a few interstitial ads, and I thought, is this enough? I mean, are they going to be able to make enough on this? And why would anybody with a tablet now go buy the print magazine?
Really?
At all?
Yeah.
Why?
I even saw an ad pop up on Flipboard where the United Airlines magazine is on Flipboard now, too.
Oh, you're kidding? Oh, wow.
I'd much rather read it that way than the stupid paper version, you know?
Wow.
Not that I fly United. They can go fly a kite for all I care.
We have now come first full circle as to know why that Steve's iPad or iPhone was in the bathroom with him. So,
I never do anything like that, Phil. Come on.
No,
I'm in and out of there in all 2 minutes or so.
Where's my iPad right now? Back at the toilet, probably.
It is funny when you go to somebody's house and you walk in there and there's like a basket with 50 magazines in it and books and stuff. And you think, And then I gave some crap to a buddy of mine because I was in there and I said, all of your hunting magazines, and he's a military fan, and so all your military magazines, everything are in there. And he goes, oh, I only look at those when I'm having a bath with candles. Sure. Uh-huh. Okay.
Have you guys seen that iPad stand that Leo Laporte has with the toilet roll holder thing on it?
No. Oh, all right, please. You got to find that. Find that.
Yeah, I'll find a picture of it. Yeah. It's hilarious. It was on iPad today. It was hilarious.
No, I never saw that. Oh, great.
Yeah, and he was saying you could have like your old iPad 1 or 2 in the bathroom in place of all the magazines. Right here. Here it is.
Wow.
Maybe I won't sell that old iPad 1.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, put it in the bathroom. Yeah, here's Graham's bathroom kiosk. They could probably make a little money on that. All right, there's an event coming up that I really, really wish that I was smart enough to have seen early on. The Amazon Web Services Reinvent Cloud Conference. It's in Las Vegas.
And it's a hot ticket.
Oh, man. I started going through this and really poking around. Sold out. Yep. The companies that are going to be there are amazing. There's one called CipherCloud, which is an encryption company that will make a splash at the event, is all they said in this article. But they do things like they encrypt Gmail. So if you are a Google Apps customer for your company, you can use CipherCloud, and it'll actually encrypt everything at the desktop level before it's even sent. And then anyone in your company can decrypt it just by having their credentials. you know, being logged into their email. Not if it's POP email or something. I got to be use the web version, but they're encrypting all this stuff in the cloud. And I just think it's just fascinating. It's 256-bit encryption, and which is really, really strong. But there's a lot of really great companies that are going to be out there. So I think this cloud thing is going to stay. What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't think it's going to catch.
You don't?
Maybe. I don't know about big data, though. Big data might be a fad.
Yeah, that's getting a little overdone, maybe, just slightly. But anyway, Jamie Thingelsat's going to be out at this, huh, Steve?
He is, yep.
We'll have to catch up with him when he gets back.
Well, maybe he can, I'll ping him and see if he can send us some stuff.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'll bet you George Reese from Instratus, now Dell, will certainly be there as well. So there probably is a whole bunch of Twin Cities people are going to be at this thing.
Oh, I'm sure.
And it's only like 8,000 people, though. It's not huge, 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 but they capped it, apparently, or the venue where they're having it. It's sold out, you know. Of course, it will be outdone the following week by Dreamforce, which gets about, 40,000 people in San Francisco? I mean, they're like holding sessions out on the street. It so takes over the town so much, I guess. Well, practically, I mean, it's like it's too big for even, you know, all the Moscone's I've heard. It's like hotel. It's, you know, it's almost like a Vegas-style event where it takes over the whole damn town. Oh, you know, well, 40,000 isn't as big as Vegas events get. What is it, 150,000 at CES?
Yeah.
You know, but still, this AWS event is definitely the place to be next week.
Well, I got to tell you about, I'm throwing this in at the last minute. And I apologize for that, but
this could be a surprise to all of us now.
It could be. I just found this morning, and it was on Fast Company, their co-design area. And I put a link in the show notes. It's for an app called MakerSwarm. And if you watch the video, it shows how you can use the app. It's an Android app, and you can drag and drop or connect with your finger different devices and locations. And I looked at this and I thought to myself, this is exactly what I want for smart things. I want a flow chart with a bunch of icons in a browser window and be able to say, okay, I want this to happen with this device, and I want it to connect to this and turn these on, and I want it to do this and this. And each icon has its own attributes underneath it. And so you could connect up all your things, but you could do it visually. And they're talking about this thing as being a roll of duct tape for the Internet of Things.
The Napster of the connected world.
Yeah. And I really was blown away by this. So I just wanted to throw this in.
Yeah, this is cool.
What if?
You know, and my question of them would be is, why you don't have iOS?
Well,
if it's Android only, what?
That's true. And Well, I've been using the, you know, if this, then that, IFTTT site. And it is, it's way too linear. You know, you lay out your stuff in a linear fashion, so you can't put in interrupts. So, because what I want with a flowchart is if I walk in to a room, I can turn the light on with my little presence sensor from SmartThings. But what I want is if I walk into the room and it's 8 o'clock at night, I don't want the light to turn on because maybe the baby's sleeping. And, you know, so I want other conditions around that without having to be an app developer to write a little SmartThings app. And so that's what I looked at with this, with MakerSwarm, is you could have all these different conditions. So, you know, tweet or send me an SMS when the garage door is open more than 30 minutes, except if it's Saturday, because I might be out cutting the lawn and I want the garage door open. So anyway. I just thought it was pretty cool. So this is the kind of stuff that's beginning to emerge. And this is why when I thought about this cloud conference, I thought, oh, man, I wonder if they're going to be out there. I don't know. So we'll just have to see.
Well, anybody. Hey, Steve. Anybody.
Yeah.
What happened to your tip of the week for security? Whatever happened to that?
Yeah, by the way, yeah.
Well, you guys were giving me so much crap about it.
We haven't had one in a while.
I think somebody broke into his vault and stole all his tips.
No, okay, I'll do a tip next week. I can't come up with one on the fly.
Watching Security Now. That's what
it actually happened. I haven't watched it for a couple of weeks. Well, I had this cold this week, so it was just a real struggle trying to. Well, I had some client stuff that I had to get done, and it was just. And actually, I had a client site blow up, and I started working on it at 3 o'clock one afternoon and got done about 9:30 at night. So it's just crap like that.
Wow.
So
okay,
that's my excuse.
We'll let you have to hook this week.
Thanks, Tim. Tim, you're the nicest guy. You are. You know what? And I don't care what Graham and Phil say about you. I like you a lot.
What a kidder. So easy.
All right. So what's coming up?
Well, listen,
what's coming up with events?
We got an event. Any events new there? We get, let's see, investors. That's that fundraising.
The City Camp MN looks like it's.
Yep.
Well, it's actually today.
It is today at St. Thomas.
It's a Saturday event.
So if you're listening and it's not Saturday, then it's over.
It's over.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then, and then
Connect Minnesota Summit.
Yep.
It's on the 4th.
And that's, the Blandin Foundation is one of the drivers or maybe the driver behind Connect Minnesota, but they're going to get an overview and update from the governor's task force on broadband and a lot of stuff. So, I mean, anybody really in the municipal space around the state of Minnesota are going to this, but anybody that's interested in internet policy and helping to drive, internet usage and adoption and so forth throughout the state, public safety, all kinds of stuff is going to be covered. So it's going to be a good event.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, but then we'll also meet up here again next week and talk about what's happened in the world of the Minnesota tech and innovation on
the Minnovate Gang podcast.
Yes, indeed.
Take care.
See you later.
See you guys.